This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From the WEEI studios, 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, an Odyssey Sports Station.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Ark and Hart on WEEI.
Lori. Oh, look, he lost it up top. Look out here. Sillinger over the line. Two on one. Send it to the middle. They score. A shorthanded goal. The Bruins have allowed two. Danforth with the strike makes it 4-1 Blue Jackets.
All right, I think I have the scoop.
Do you?
You ready for the scoop?
Scoop away.
Ready for the scoop?
We've been on pins and needles. Wait, wow.
Pins and needles. Jim Montgomery is out. Joe Sacco taking over.
Jim Montgomery fired by the Boston Bruins. Yep. Joe Sacco will be replacing him on the Bruins bench.
Boom.
According to hashtag Scoops Keith.
Scoops Keith, never wrong. He's never been wrong. I don't think he's ever been wrong about any scoop that he's had, Bruins related or otherwise. I've never, ever heard this guy have to come on the air and be like, hey, you know what? At a bad source.
Right.
Something changed. Something went wrong. Something happened. It was different. He's batting 1,000.
In his source takes.
In his source
unsourced takes, sir.
Well, I mean, anybody's unsourced. I'm talking about his scoops, not his takes. Like, his scoop's different from a take. And this was a scoop, and this is one that I believe, and I think that we were all expecting it at some point. And after last night, with those two shorthanded goals against the Blue Jackets, who stink, you've basically signed your execution warrant there. I think that's what happened. And for this Bruins team, I've been saying all along, since the first game of the season, basically, that anything that you're going to try and push off to blame on Montgomery is only going to work for a little bit. That's only going to, I don't think that this is not necessarily going to turn the team around and they're all going to suddenly start playing well under Joe Sacco. And that's no disrespect to Joe Sacco or anything. I just think that these problems that this team has go way beyond the head coach. I've said that all along. And I feel like the only way to be consistent in that take is to say that something else needs to happen. This isn't just, you see how they react. See, maybe Sacco is the greatest coach of all time, and we just didn't know. We had him sitting there on the bench, and we didn't know how great he was, and he's going to be able to whip these guys into shape, and they're going to run off a 10-game win streak or something. But in the event that that doesn't happen, in the event that you still keep getting this same dull, listless team that can't, the worst power play I've ever seen, and this team has had some bad power plays over the years. This is the worst one I've ever seen. They are 32nd in the league in power play percentage, 11%. They suck, all right? Like, in terms of special teams, they straight up suck. They basically suck at everything. They suck at scoring. They suck at goaltending. They suck on the blue line. Like, they have no strengths. And this is something that I think is not necessarily just a coach issue. And so in order for me to be consistent here, in order to back up what I'm saying, I think that more needs to happen. I think that more, if in the event that they don't whip off a big win streak here, more needs to happen. It can't just be all about Jim Montgomery, because this and what we're seeing here this year is not just all about Jim Montgomery.
But those would have to be high-level meetings. And by high-level, I mean, I think that means the Jacobs level, correct?
Yep.
I mean, if we're doing our pillar power rankings, you'd go to the number one pillar.
Sure.
Jacobs. If your name's not Jacobs, exit the room right now. We have to have a discussion. But if the thing that is so bothersome to me is going back to that idea that they showed up out of shape. Remember when Montgomery admitted, yeah, we did think conditioning and was an issue in training camp, but not anymore. We're past that now. And if a team shows up out of shape, generally, conditioning-wise, mm-hmm. isn't that a sign that they don't really respect the coach?
Sure.
Like, isn't that, you don't really care. There's a lack of investment in A, professionalism, and just showing up in shape because, well, they pay me a lot of money and that's my job. But also, you clearly have no fear of repercussions from the coach if you're just going to show up out of shape and not be ready to go when you know when camp starts, you know what's expected of you, you know how it's going to kind of be run. That was an alarming, and if you remember, we didn't really hear about that till afterwards.
Yep.
It's kind of like this roster. Everybody thinks the roster stinks now. I didn't read any of these analysts telling me this roster stunk going into the season. I didn't really read any of the analysts at the time telling me the team was out of shape on the training camp ice. Then they stink in the regular season. They're like, oh, by the way, you guys were out of shape in training camp. Maybe we should have paid attention to
that.
We
thought so during camp, but
yeah.
We don't think so anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. Now you just stink. Now you're in shape, but you stink.
Andy and Stiz and Brian, we may have ourselves a scoop-off.
Uh-oh.
Tom Cuddy over at WBZ, a competitor, says Jim Montgomery remains Bruins head coach and will take questions after Wednesday's practice.
Ooh, a good old-fashioned scoop-off.
We got a scoop-off, boys and girls.
Go!
We got a scoop-off. I would warn Tom Cuddy, you saw it with Coco. You want to go down this road with Scoops Keefe, do it at your own risk.
I'm Team Keefe.
Oh, I'm Team Keefe,
right
too.
Right now, choose sides.
You know? That's a strong report. I thought you were just going to say remains Bruins head coach, and I was like, oh, it's a timing
thing. No. And we'll take questions after Wednesday's practice.
Yeah, like 24 hours from now.
Like when's your flight? When's your flight?
That's
back?
What
kind of questions?
Listen. That's a bold report.
Yeah. It's a bold report. I mean, listen, Keefe was a bold report.
I feel like he's directly pushing back on Keefe, though. No?
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the team has been very quiet. Elliot Friedman and all the, you know, the Hockey Night in Canada people, they're all very quiet. TSN's quiet. Dupes is quiet. Hags is quiet. Jimmy Murphy's quiet. He's the loudest guy I know. He's quiet. Like, there's a lot. No one has jumped on this yet. Right? We have the aggregators and Twitter and stuff like Savage Sports and things like that who have jumped on it and jumped on it. But Keefe has said there hasn't been a confirmation. There hasn't been a big, you know, big J journalism confirmation on this yet. I'm going with Scoops Keefe because he's been right almost every single time. However, WBZ is saying that Montgomery remains Bruins head coach and will take questions after Wednesday's practice. The plot thickens. We'll keep an eye on this. We will. I mean, listen.
Tom Cuddy's been around a long time.
Oh, yeah.
He's been around the Bruins a long time.
Cuddy's cuts.
So I'm not just going to totally dismiss that, but we got to pick a side in scoop-offs, right? You got to pick a side?
I'm entrenched on Scoops Keefe's side,
this
of course.
This is Scoopable.
I'm with Keefe.
Scoopable. 617-779-7937. We do have some Celtic stuff to get to as well, but let's go ahead and get to the phones. Joe is in Melrose. Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys. I agree with you. I think the Bruins need drastic changes. I think it was a big mistake to get away from the goalie rotation. I don't think Swayman can handle a full-time goalie full-time goalie position of taking 55 CC games. He has to switch off with Corpusello. I think the Bruins probably need to look at like trading for like somebody like Derek Forbort to shore up the power play. I don't think... Well, I mean, he helped with the, not power play, power.
Penalty kill? I'm okay with Derek Forbort. Thanks for the call. The only problem with what you're saying, and I know a lot of people are still pining for the goalie rotation, you feasibly couldn't do it anymore. Swayman was up. You had to pay him. You had to do something.
Right.
You either had to move on and let him go after free agency, trade him, or pay him the money. And if you did that, now it's $13 million between the two goalies. Like, that's way too much. And both of them wanted to play 55 games. So... You know, like if that's what you're working with, then you can't have both guys playing 55 games. Maybe they, you know, you want to go back in retrospect and say they traded the wrong guy. Look at Ullmark. He's not doing much better than Swayman is this year. So I don't necessarily know that that's the case either, but it's worth exploring. I mean, listen, no one fought harder than I did for Swayman to get paid and for them to move on with their lives and get this over with. And I still think that there's something to be said for the idea that the Bruins trading away all their leverage and then playing hardball was some of the dumbest negotiating tactics I've ever seen or heard of in my entire life. But regardless, here we are. And even with all that, Swayman talked about it and Monty talked about it yesterday. Not to make this all about Swayman right now, but like, you know, you miss camp. we're a month plus into the season. Like, all that stuff, well, he didn't have Cam, he's not ready to go. That's over with. That's right. Not an excuse anymore. Now Absolutely. You just suck.
And right? he doesn't, as far as I know, have any injury either. That would have been my right. other concern coming in without camp. I haven't heard anything like, oh, he's got a sore oblique that's causing him, or a sore groin or something. I've heard nothing of that. He's just not a good goalie right now. And you're right. The excuse of missing time and being rusty and your timing being off and not enough ice time or any of that, long gone and hard to find. Now you just stink. Now you're not a good goalie right now, and you're a grossly overpaid not good goalie right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, seriously. Mike's in the car. Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? How's
Hello.
It going?
It's going. How you doing?
So, you know, and I think I've been calling the station now for about 15 years, and I think I've only done this exactly one other time, mm-hmm. and that is I am calling to apologize to a host.
Wow.
Arcand, mm-hmm. I called you after the fourth game, the second loss against Florida, and I told you that you were overreacting, mm-hmm. and it was early in the season and all that other stuff, and I am calling to say I was wrong. You were completely correct in your assessment at that time. I don't know what the solution is. I do wonder if there is a degree of, you know, Monty being a lame duck coach playing into it. But I think at some point, right, and I think that point actually is probably passed, where you have to put the onus on these players. I mean, 3 years ago, the problem was Cassidy, and they got rid of him because, you know, he hurt their field.
Sure.
Now, you know, Montgomery leads you to 1 year to the, you know, best season in regular season in the history of the NHL. Last year, another great year, regular season. I mean, at what point do the players take ownership and say, hey, you know what, this isn't on the coach, this is on us? I think you got to look at this whole era of the core of Marchand, Bergeron, you know, Krejci, et al., and just you can't view it any other way than a disappointment. In all that time, with all that talent, all those great teams, they won exactly one cup.
Yep. You're right about that, Mike, and I accept your apology. Thank you for being the bigger person right there. Oftentimes, you don't get that from
no.
callers, texters, things like that. You don't get apologies, but I appreciate that. It's nice. And listen, regardless of what happens with Jim Montgomery here, whether it's Keefe is right or Cuddy's right or whoever it is right, you can't deny that this season is a disaster so far. I mean, this is a disastrous start to the year, considering how this team generally starts and considering what the expectations were for them coming into the season. Now, there's still a lot of hockey left to play, but this isn't like some bad puck luck. This isn't, well, they ran into a couple of hot teams. This is, they are not competitive. I mean, they're going out there and they're getting smoked by lousy teams. They got shut out by the Flyers. I mean, it's 7 goals the other night. Like, this is a dead team. This is a broken team. And they're not just broke because the coach was, I don't even know what the problem is. Like, what's everybody's main issue with Jim Montgomery? Like, what's he doing wrong? You know, like, that's sort of what I'd like to know. If you think that Monty has to go, aside from the bad record, what's he specifically doing? Because I can tell you what all the players are doing that I don't like. I can tell you that Swayman's been really bad and not controlling rebounds, and the defensemen are turning the puck over way too much, and all this other stuff. Yes, it is.
So we have reached out to Scoops Keefe,
yes.
and we have an official response
it
from
is.
Richard Scoops Keefe.
Okay.
Quote, I stand by it.
Stand by. He stands by the story.
Stands by it.
Samson Simpson. I stick to my story. Good, Scoops Keefe.
As you should.
You should. You definitely should.
You stumbled into something a minute ago, though.
Oh,
because you're asking, you're talking about the team, like, they don't have any strengths.
Right.
Usually bad teams have strengths.
Yeah.
Hell, we're watching the Patriots. They have a strength.
They
have a quarterback. Right. Mm-hmm. Generally, bad teams have something you say, at least they do that well. This team does not have a single strength right now. But if you ask what your problem with Monty is, that's what my response would be. You don't do anything well. You had a roster that won 100 games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, had 100 points last year. You had a roster that people thought was going to be a playoff roster, thought was going to be a very competitive hockey team, and you stink at everything. So that falls on the coach. The coach oversees everything. Like, that's the reality of leadership, right? I mean, how many times
yeah.
have we heard Bill Belichick or Gerard Mayo or whoever? More in football, I feel like you get it, but ultimately it falls on my shoulders. The responsibility lies with me. I got to coach it better. If everything on a team stinks, doesn't that mean the coach stinks?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be my answer.
Kind of. But we've also seen this coach the team.
But it doesn't matter.
The same
Those were different,
well.
Different teams, different makeups.
Wasn't
I
that
don't know
different?
What it, was.
I mean, it wasn't really that different.
Different
last
emotions,
year.
Different complacencies. Who knows what the air? Because I do think there's something to this that it's a cultural issue. It's a motivation issue. It's something beyond just the physical. The physical's bad, don't get me wrong. The physical's pretty bad on the ice. But it feels like they just, they all need like a slap in the face, like a wake-up call. Just like line them up and go right around the locker room.
You ever seen that video of that guy doing that? The guy walking around and just slapping each guy in the locker room?
That's what they need.
Yeah, they kind of do. 617-77, not that we're advocating violence or anything. 617-779, who would do that? Like Tortorella? That'd be something Tortorella would do. Just walk in, bam, bam, bam. 617-779-7937. We'll continue with your Bruins phone calls. The Celtics and their rivals, the Cleveland Cavaliers, meet for the first time tonight in some NBA Cup action. The Celtics trying to hand the Cavs their first loss of the season. More on that with Stiz here on What's Trending.
Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Had the chance at the last shot at the end of regulation, and Tatum missed it. He's got the ball now. 10 seconds left in overtime. Abaji defends. Brown pushed down by Mitchell. No foul. Tatum's got to go in a hurry. He pulls up. Yes!
What do they say now?
Jason Tatum with the game winner over the Toronto Raptors. That was this weekend. Saturday, right?
I think so. I was just thinking, we haven't really talked about it.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it at all yesterday, as it was a Patriots Monday, and now we've had this Bruins news, or now we have a scoop-off, I guess, between Rich Keefe and Tom Cuddy, and we'll keep you apprised on what's going on there. But the Boston Celtics tonight, as the NBA Cup play rolls along, will take on the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they'll be doing it on the heels of their thrilling overtime buzzer-beating win over the Toronto Raptors, who aren't very good, but it was, at the very least, even if you didn't love everything about that game, and I'll be honest with you, I mean, I thought that was going to be a much easier time for the Celtics going against those Raptors, who I don't think are particularly strong. Jakob Poeltl went crazy in that
game.
Yeah,
he did.
That was he was unbelievable. He was like Tim Duncan in that game. He had 35 points on 16 of 19 shooting. RJ Barrett had a triple-double. Like, this was the Raptors. Here's the thing, and I think you might see this tonight. The Celtics are now entering the target on their back phase, I think. Like, to start the year, they were the big bad Celtics, and they were kind of rolling over everybody with a couple of exceptions. And now that everybody's sort of settled into what the season is, even a bad team like the Raptors, who are 2-12 or whatever they are, they're all these teams now from here on out, they're going to be giving Boston their best game. And I think you're going to be seeing that pretty much on a uniform basis. I don't know that that means the Celtics aren't going to blow everybody out. I mean, I still think they're better than a lot of these teams, but that was eye opening to me over the weekend. But on the plus side, and it's a big plus, Jason Tatum hitting a game winner. Don't see that too often.
No.
I mean, you really don't. Like, usually he either misses it or you give it to Jalen Brown or somebody else takes
the
shot.
Well, he missed his first try at the end of regulation.
He did. He almost missed the backboard. He missed the rim to the left by, like, 3 feet.
He did. But then he hit the game winner.
He did.
So, you know, I mean, and it was against the Raptors, and he may have traveled, which is in the NBA two-minute report came out and said that he traveled, moved his feet a little bit, which I don't care about because whoever, I forget who it was, Agbaji or somebody, decked Jalen Brown.
Yeah, and they admitted that.
In the very beginning. So, I mean, those kind of offset for me, and he had to make the shot anyway, and he made it, and it was a clutch shot, and Jason Tatum is not something that comes supernaturally to him, so I give him props for that. How do you think this is going to go tonight? You seem very bullish on the Celtics, Andy.
So, I am. I think, now, this theory has been devalued a little bit by the loss to the Warriors.
Yes.
But I've always thought for multiple years now, this team circled games on the calendar before the season even started and wanted to prove points, wanted to show people. And I don't know what happened in the Warriors game because that should have been a prove it to the whole damn world and Steve Kerr and everybody else, and they lost that game. I think this is a, oh, everybody seems to think the Cavs are the team to beat in the East now. They're undefeated. I think this is a circle it game. I will be going on my FanDuel app and putting together a nice homer parlay that will include overs on Tatum and Brown. That will include a Celtics win. I think last I saw they were 5.5-point favorite, something like that.
Let me look it up here. The Celtics,
which has come up, I believe it was 4.5, and it's
worked 5.5
to 5.5-point favorites. So I think a lot of people are still, I don't want to say questioning the Cavs, but wondering, are the Cavs really for real? Like, really, really? Like? You know how you're in elementary school? You like, or right. You just like her? Are they really real, or are they just kind of a real good team for the East? And I think the Celtics are going to take this as a challenge. I think you said it. Other teams are going to give the Celtics their best, like the Raptors, and that's fine. But if the Celtics bring anything near their best, teams like that, they should take care of.
Yes.
The problem is when they don't. This is not a game where I expect them to show up and have problems with motivation or any of those things. They're going to be swarming defensively, would be my guess. I would expect either Brown or Tatum or both to get off to one of their... This could be a 30-30 night for those two. This could be one of those 30-30 games. But one of them, my guess, will be 6 of 8 shooting in the first quarter for 14 points. And that will be the jump start to a controlled victory.
Okay. I'd like to
Homer.
See that, obviously. The only thing that gives me pause is that the last time the Celtics had one of those motivation games was Golden State.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Didn't work.
Can't do it every time.
They
get paid too, you know.
Of course. And so do the Cavaliers. But I guess that my point is that was the last time we all said, oh, watch out. You know, here it is. Now they got a real reason. They got something to go out and play for. You know, this is going to be a season where they just smoke everybody and roll over all these teams. But they got that one circled. They're circling Golden State on the calendar. And wait till you see what they got for Steve Kerr. And Kerr and Curry and the Draymond and all of them, they kicked their ass. So they didn't kick their ass, but they beat them. And I think that this is similar to that, you know.
But also remember, what was the early score in that game? Celtics were up 20? 18? They were up early.
We're going by the fact that they had a lead in the game?
Well, it just points that maybe they thought it was too easy. Maybe they thought they were going to cruise. I think they're still weak in that area. I still think that might be their biggest weakness is sort of
agree.
That.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's called, but that, you know, killer instinct, and we can get into, does that tie into Tatum and the leader of the team and how he approaches things? But they were up early. They showed up to play. They couldn't keep it up. And then Curry said, no, I'm the real deal, and we're not going away, and we're going to win this game. But you're right. The circle the game theory was very much challenged by that loss to the Warriors. That's reality.
It definitely was. The Celtics' biggest lead was 11.
I thought it was more.
In that game. And they led by 11.
Felt like more.
In the first quarter. And then after, about midway through the seconds when Golden State took it back, the Celtics did lead again in the fourth and gave it back. It was, it was a tough game. What are you going to do? I do think that, in general, it's not going to be – the Celtics and the Cavaliers – are not peers, I don't think. I think the Celtics are much more talented than the Cavaliers. Cavaliers are a talented team. And I also think there's something to be said for the fact that they didn't go the route, and we've talked about this, they didn't go the route of the Knicks, they didn't go the route of the Sixers, even the Bucks last year when they traded for Lillard and some of the other moves that got made, these other teams trying to compete with the Celtics or trying to beat the Celtics. They didn't. They said, we're going to run it back with these same guys. There was a poll that went out for all the GMs, and you couldn't vote for yourself, but it was who's going to come out of the East. And there was one vote for Cleveland. And since you can't vote for yourself, I'd imagine that was Brad Stevens. So, you know, like that seems like, to me anyway, everybody else picked Boston. That seems to me like some people were ahead of this. I was not. I thought that Cleveland was going to be another good team in the East, but not one that really could rise to the level and compete with the Celtics. I'm still not sure that in a playoff series I would be all that afraid of the Cleveland Cavaliers, even if they were at 100%. I know they weren't last year, but even if they were at 100%, I'd still feel pretty good about the Celtics in a series against this team.
Oh, I absolutely would. I mean, I would pick the Celtics against pretty much every team in a seven-game series. Now, I reserve the right to change my opinion after watching tonight's game because it's, you know, a cup game, big cup game, big NBA cup game. You know how teams get up for this.
Right.
But if there's a team that's going to circle this game, certainly the Celtics could. So will the Cavaliers.
Sure.
Because this is their potential anointment game in the East, right? Like, oh, you're not just beating other teams. You're beating the Celtics. You're beating the front runner. Now, the text line did point out the Jaylen Brown thing, but
Jaylen Brown didn't play in the Golden State game. That's true. I forgot about that. But, either way.
But they were winning games without Jaylen Brown. They were doing. We were giving them credit. But, yes, that's absolutely a factor because we would say the opposite if it was another team you were facing, right? If the Celtics had beat Golden State without Curry, we'd say they didn't have Curry. So the Warriors beat the Celtics without Jaylen Brown, you know, the most important player on the team based on recent trophies given out for important series.
Yes. Celtics and the Cavaliers may be a rivalry this year because the Celtics don't really have another rival, not in the Eastern Conference, I don't think. After Cleveland and Boston, the next team Milwaukee sucks.
Yeah, but they're starting to win some games.
Milwaukee's 5-9 right now, and I believe, let me see, I don't know if this is still the case. Yeah, they're outside of the top 10, so they wouldn't even make the play-in tournament right
season.
Now if the season were to end right now. I know it is, Andy, but I'm saying they suck. The Sixers are 2-11. Like, I don't think they're going to be 2-11 all year either. But they're having all sorts of problems.
Maxie's calling out Joel Embiid.
Now they're infighting. They're done.
Yeah.
They're Toto.
Not a good situation there in Philadelphia. My heart bleeds for those fine people, by the way. And Milwaukee, I don't think, is going to be this bad all year either. But right now, I mean, they're off to a terrible start. So in terms of rivals, in the Eastern Conference anyway, it goes Cavs, Celtics, Orlando at 9-6. And then the Knicks, who you crushed in that opener, are 8-6. And after that, everybody's under 500. The East blows. Like, the East right now sucks. And it's really just the Celtics, the Cavs, and everybody else. And over in the West, you know, it's a little bit better. You got more teams with, like, 9 or 10 wins, teams over 500. You don't have almost an entire conference under 500 like you do in the East. But, yeah, the Celtics, as good as they look, I'm starting to wonder if maybe they're just feeding on a weak Eastern Conference at this point.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's very good. Now, we could change this when people get healthy and start hitting their stride, whatever. Right. There's still talented teams that aren't winning. I hesitate to ask you this, given our fight on what a winner and a loser is.
Okay.
What do you consider a rival? Like, is it just a good team? Because for me, a rivalry has to have more than just two good teams. There has to be an added layer of theater.
It's sort of tongue-in-cheek when I say that, but like rival, what I consider a rival is a team that you go back and forth with, right? Like, and they haven't really gone back and forth with Cleveland, so right. That's why it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. Cleveland's 15-0, so they're the team ahead of you, and I consider that a rivalry just because everyone thought the Celtics would be 15-0 and that they'd be leading the East and all of that. So Cleveland's where you want to be right now, technically, in the standings. That makes them the right. It's the closest I can think of. Okay. I mean, there's nobody really else that I would put up there. Golden State, I guess, is a rival, but
see, that's a rival to me.
It is,
or
but
even
it was from 2 years
what about
ago.
Miami?
Miami and the Bucks, I think, are both kind of rivals because to me, a rivalry has like the Giannis thing with Jaylen Brown.
Yeah,
has another layer of something.
And
energy.
The Heat have beaten them in the playoffs several times. I don't know if I still consider them. I don't know if I still consider them to be on that level.
Well, that's why my dream,
right,
from this perspective, is the Giannis trades and he goes to Miami. Because you put Jimmy Butler and Giannis on the Heat, there's your rival. The culture, the whole damn thing. I can hate them. I can hate them easily. I can muster up plenty of energy to root against them and boo them. So that would be my dream if you want a true rival.
Let me tell you this. Cleveland beats Boston tonight. They're rivals. All right? I know it's not a playoff series or anything like that, but if you come into Boston, and the game's in Boston, going to be on that ugly green floor. You come into Boston with that NBA Cup fluorescent day glow green court, and they beat the Celtics. You know, it's that to me will cement it. There's your rivals right there. Boston Celtics, Cleveland Cavaliers, like it's 2013 all over again, or 2017 all over again, or 2008 all over again, or end of the Larry Bird era when they were losing in the playoffs to those Mark Price, Hot Rod Williams, Brad Doherty teams, even all the way back to
that. That was a long time ago.
Craig Elo and those guys. Like, yeah, listen, I mean, Cleveland, it's not Celtics-Lakers or anything like that, but they've had some battles over the years, and certainly in the LeBron era and beyond. So I'm fine with that. I'm fine with the Celtics and the Cavs being the rivals in the Eastern Conference this year. And they're not necessarily there yet. I know I'm jumping the gun just because I'm desperate for this team to have some kind of competition. But I'm expecting a good game tonight. I'm expecting this to be a fun one. And I'd be surprised if either one of these teams really ran away with it. You're expecting Boston to run away with it.
I don't know about, like, I think,
you just said you're making a bunch of homer parlays.
Double digits in play.
Okay.
I think a 10 or a 12-point win, a controlled game, is very much in play. Now, I will tell you that Cheap Andy, part of the reason he may do a risque parlay is because I believe it's a no-risque parlay if I get it over plus 400 with my friends at FanDuel.
Mm-hmm. FanDuel, they got all those no-sweat bets. Yeah,
you're damn right, and that's what I'm going to do.
No-sweat
same-game
parlays.
Go in with my guys, Tatum and Brown and the Celtics, and then if I win it, I'm obviously very happy. If I lose it, there was no sweat.
If you lose it, hope is here. GamblingHelplineMA.org or call 800. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. There is a take going around, mostly on the internet, about how these Patriots would be doing if Bill Belichick was still the head coach. I think Stiz started this rumor.
Shut it, Stiz.
He started this whole thing. It's been bothering Andy. It's been bothering me, but we'll get to that next.
AUDACY. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Why was the roster in such bad shape entering this offseason?
You tell me.
he almost said what he said.
Not doing that one. Not doing that one.
That was Gerard Mayo on the Greg Hill Show. It was about a month ago, right? A little more? This was a while
October
ago.
October 14th.
Yeah. October 14th. So, yeah, just about a month ago. Month and a few days. And that ruffled some feathers. You could tell Bill Belichick, Mike Lombardi, basically all of Belichick's mouthpieces all fired back about, you know, how the run defense was so much better last year. And basically, at the time, the Patriots, I think, were 1-6, I want to say. Maybe 2-6. It was bad times for the Patriots. It looked like they were probably going to win less than four games, which they still might do, even though they have three right now. But at that point, the Belichick faithful, the Belichick loyalists, the Stizzes of the world,
cult members,
were making it rain. I mean, it was, you know, look at that. This last year's team was better than this team. Last year's team with Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi, with Bill Belichick coaching, they weren't any good, but they were better than this team. And now all of a sudden, that narrative has shifted dramatically from last year's team was better than this team to this team, if Bill Belichick was still coaching it, would have 8 wins. And I don't know exactly where this started or what the genesis of it was, who the first person was to tweet this. I don't think it was Stiz.
Some random dude on the internet.
It was just some random internet person, or maybe, you know, one of the Belichick loyalists, or maybe it was the fake Patrick Pass account or something like that. I don't know exactly.
Or maybe it was the spirit of Patriots Nation.
It could have been that too. It could have been the spirit
of Patriots
Nation.
Patriot Nation is all in Drake May's area right now. They're focused on Drake May. It's some of you pretzel losers that are trying to defend Belichick and puff up Belichick right now.
You can have both. You can be a supporter of Drake May and Savior Bill Belichick.
You got to pick one. So who you picking? You got to pick one. You're either with us or you're against us.
Don't give me a Sophie's choice.
With us, with us is Drake May. Against us is you can go be with Belichick on the whatever the hell team, the Jaguars. You can become a Jaguars fan next year with Bill.
He's going to go to the Cowboys and he's going to get the record.
I don't think so. Sounds like the Jags. I don't want to pre-tease the Bill watch, but the Jags are in the mix.
There is some reporting on the Jags. Why does that whole line of thinking, if Bill was here, they'd be 8-3. Why does that bother you so much, Andy? Because I know why it bothers me. Why does it bother you so
much? Because it means you didn't watch the last 3 to 4 years of football. They were a poorly coached football team. He made mistakes in every area. Not even the first part. Would he have drafted him? Could you have Drake May and Bill Belichick?
Has he said anything this year
positive
that makes it sound like he would have drafted Drake May?
No.
That he had him high on his draft board, or that he was like high on Drake May, that he wanted him here? None of that. He's all but buried the kid, you know?
Buried him.
Really?
The draft coverage?
Right when he got drafted, he was like, I don't know about this. This guy is a raw talent. He makes a lot of mistakes. He's got all these issues, blah, 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 blah. He was not positive on that pick at all.
So that's a secondary issue for me in this, is that I don't know that he would have drafted Drake May 3rd. He would have traded down. You know, you get the real mockers on the internet that are like, it would have taken a kicker and a tackle, or a guard and a kicker. Maybe. I'm just saying he might not have drafted Drake May based on the way he's talked about him. But forget that. The Patriots of the last few years were characteristically terrible. They had penalties. They made mistakes. All areas of what we've been talking about with this team at various times were an issue for that team. In special teams, giving teams extra chances to kick field goals, giving them first downs on penalties, being out of position, and then also some of the other stuff that we're critical of Mayo for, communication with players. How's he getting along with Jalen Polk and these other guys? Well, Bill didn't communicate with anybody, didn't talk to his quarterback. You couldn't have a worse situation than not talking to your quarterback and some of your coaches. So I said it to Fitzy today on the Six Rings pod. It's a great pod. Go find it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
If you give me Quantum Leap Bill Belichick from 04 maybe, then we can have a conversation. Would this team be better off for it? Would they have maybe stopped either Nacua or Cup on Sunday? Right? Like some of those conversations. But the recent years, Bill Belichick failed in almost everything he did. That's just the reality.
Yeah.
So I don't know where it really is. Just
eight wins,
cult like.
Be an 8-win team.
You would not be an 8-win team. You would absolutely. You might be able to convince me you could steal a game somewhere, but you know what the flip side would be? I'm not sure you beat the Bengals. I'm not sure you're Gatorade showering Bill Belichick with a win over the Bengals like you did for Gerard Mayo. Mm-hmm. So you may pick up this. Let's say you pick up the Seattle game. You lose the Bengals game.
Right.
So the record just became similar again. Can I add, do you have something very important you want to say here?
Not particularly.
Can I add questions to this?
Sure.
What would your record be if Mike Vrabel was the head coach? So you're 3-8. I just want to, right now you're 3-8. The honks, the stizzes of the world want you to believe you'd be 8-3 with Bill Belichick. Mike Vrabel's your head coach. You hired him in January. What's your record with Mike Vrabel?
I'd say, I think he probably would have gone to Drake a little faster.
Okay.
I think. I don't know. I mean, it seemed like there was some split within the organization on that, mm-hmm. so maybe he would have gotten outvoted, so maybe it wouldn't have been any different. But I'd say for Vrabel, just because of the experience and some of the in-game stuff that I think like may have caused some of these games with Mayo and his inexperience and not mm-hmm. knowing what to do in certain situations, I'd give it maybe a win. I'd say like you're maybe 4-7 at this point.
I went
5-6 at the best.
5-6 is mine.
I'd say 4. I'd cap it off at 4-7.
Mike Vrabel, I got you 5-6.
Vrabel flamed out at the end there too. And
at the end, but Tennessee. He was a good coach for a while in Tennessee.
Yeah,
he flamed out.
Bill was a good coach for a while too, and then he flamed out.
Yeah, but
out.
He's young.
Yeah,
Bill's 72. Mike Vrabel's 54.
True,
or something.
But also no still one in the NFL prime. Wanted either one of them. So you know,
well, he's working for the Browns. He's taking the Browns over, I believe. I think he's gonna be the head coach of the Browns.
You think so?
I think he's sliding in the back door with Myles Garrett, and they're just gonna kick Stefanski to the curb.
Okay.
Nope. And then another question. If Josh McDaniels was the offensive coordinator of the Patriots, what would their record be?
With Vrabel, too, or just on this team instead of Alex Van Pelt?
I didn't really do that in my mind.
Are we talking about blowing out the whole thing? It's just so it's
this
team. I was
kind of this team with McDaniels instead of Van Pelt.
I'd say probably one more win. I'd give him one more win.
I got him at 6-5 with McDaniels.
6-5.
I think McDaniels would have fought hard for Drake May to be the quarterback in week one.
I'm sure he would have, but he'd still be working with the same offense.
Yeah.
With the same line and these same receivers and same everything. So I don't know
games.
That it would have been much
He's different. Won a couple games here. He would have had more chances to win games. He would have had more experience. He'd be better for the Rams game because he played in the Bengals game, right? All of that would have been fast-tracked.
They probably would have won the Dolphins game if Drake May played instead of Brissett.
Probably. So Drake May plays earlier, you win more games. I say you're a 6-5 football team if Josh McDaniels is the offensive coordinator for this year's team.
Sure.
But to circle back
if they
around,
listened to him and played May all season long. But really, I think no matter who the offensive coordinator was, if you played May from the beginning of the season, you'd have a different record.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's really more about him than about who
well,
the OC is.
But it's
right?
also there's a view of what and Alex Van Pelt, I think, was the one who didn't want to play him. I firmly believe that Alex Van Pelt was in the slow play category. But the flip side of that is 8-3, where we started here this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe there's a coach that's ever been born that would win 8 games with this team.
Yeah,
I really don't. They're not very good.
No, they suck.
They can't tackle. All those people that told me how good the defense is, it isn't. Could they be marginally better in certain areas? Obviously. But I think 8 wins is an absolute pipe dream with Bill at his best, Vince Lombardi, whoever you want, Bud Wilkinson. Clark Shaughnessy.
Amos Alonzo Stagg.
Whoever you want to pencil in there is not winning 8 games with this team. Now, if you tell me the GM is different and we replaced Elliott Wolf, that's a totally different thing. But you can't replace him with Bill because we're in this situation because of Bill's a terrible GM.
Because of his GM decisions. I absolutely agree with that. All right, there you go. 6-1-7.
Well, you wouldn't have Drake May either if it wasn't for those crappy seasons. Suck it.
Oh, so we're doing that? Like the documentary that they did about the Ravens, how Bill set them up to have like Ray Lewis and everybody. And really, Bill built the Ravens.
That's right.
That all that losing paid off, and it was unfair that he didn't get a 6th season running that franchise into the ground to follow them to Baltimore.
People can't respect genius when it's happening in front of them.
I guess not.
Yeah. So you think Bill wasn't fired
from the
Patriots? Because why would he prepare to have a high pick?
I'm half joking, but
no, I don't think you are. I think you're a full fledged cult member.
Yeah, I hate this narrative.
If
he
said
so
drink
mean.
This, you would drink
oh,
this.
Oh, he was so mean. Now we got Gerard Mayo dancing on the sideline.
Wait a minute.
Give me a break.
Who cares
oh,
if he was mean?
He was tough.
He sucked. That was the problem. Last year, he was a bad coach.
He had a quarterback that he didn't want.
That he drafted.
He drafted, yeah. And he ruined. He ruined. Can you say it? Did he ruin Mac Jones?
Mac Jones isn't looking great right now.
Did he ruin him?
Maybe, yes.
Did Bill say it? Say it. I want to hear you say
no,
Bill Belichick ruined Mac Jones.
I don't know if he ruined Mac Jones.
He replaced Josh McDaniels, a top 5 offensive coordinator,
Patricia,
with guys who had never coached offense. Don't tell me he didn't. He said a good coach is a good coach. It was one of the dumbest statements he ever made in his 40 years of coaching.
He did say it. Players win and coaches lose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when you put a coach who's never coached that position or that side of the ball before in a high-level position, you lose. And you didn't do it intentionally. You did it because you had a big ego.
Yep, that's pretty much it. All right, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. The Boston Bruins, according to Scoops Keefe, have fired Jim Montgomery. He said that at the end of the Jones and Keefe show today, right after Grab Bag and right before the crossover. Big, big news. It has been there's been a bit of a scoop off here as rival radio stations are reporting otherwise. No one else is really saying anything about this. So we'll get back to that. We'll reset on the Bruins. We'll reset on Jim Montgomery. If he's out, it seems like he is. Where do you go from here? What's the next move to be made? And how do you think this team is going to respond to getting their coach fired, which is what happened here? 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Quick break. We're back with the Bruins after this.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.